Alrighty, hello everyone. Welcome back to the Deeper Podcast. As always, it is so good to have you here. I'm Austin Slater, and I've got Dan Kinnis with me in the studio again. Dan, thanks for being here.
Good to be here. Hello to Austin. Hello to everybody else out there, too.
Are you surviving this return of winter? Yeah. I know I'm not taking
it well. We were talking about it in the office today, too. It's when you've had a few nice days, it's just tough when winter returns, even if you know we're not... not really out of it yet. So.
I should have known. I was like, because again, you know, it was 70 in February, end of February. I'm like, intellectually, I knew winter was going to come again. But in my heart of hearts, I kind of hoped it wouldn't.
I know. We're supposed to get a few inches of snow this weekend. So we'll see. But yeah, I mean, at this point, at least, you know, it's March and we're getting closer to actual springtime. But yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those things that you just kind of deal with, and I'm definitely dealing, but we're making it through. But one of the nice things is that I get to come and learn from you and listen to you every Sunday. And so I'd love to be reminded real quick, as I'm sure most of our audience would as well, what did we learn on Sunday?
Yeah, we're getting close to Easter as well. Spring's kind of setting in here, so we're just a couple weeks out and kind of in these scenes around Jesus' death and resurrection. And this week we were right there at the cross in Mark's gospel and kind of looking through the eyes of some of these faithful women disciples of Jesus. And we said they haven't been introduced in Mark's gospel. All of a sudden at the end here they come in because they're the ones who give witness to these events. Everyone else has kind of flown the coop. So we were looking through their eyes and just thinking about how difficult this would be to take in, seeing Jesus, you know, put to death and tortured and wondering what was going on and just trying to make sense of that and then relating to our lives. You know, there's these things that happen that we don't expect or we wouldn't hope for, and wrestling with the Lord, what is he doing? What does this mean? But staying faithful in the midst of that. And we just noted how the women, they keep coming. You know, they're there when Jesus is buried. They come on Sunday morning to the tomb, even though they don't know, how are we going to move this stone? They just want to be there with Jesus, that continued faithfulness, even in the face of questions. And yeah, just the challenges that come in the walk of faith. So, yeah, I looked at that for ourselves because that's still the reality. And, yeah, just the encouragement that Jesus has walked through the greatest challenge for us before us. He's endured much more than we will have to as well.
Mm-hmm. And I really appreciated one of the things that you kind of set up as we were starting this was that last week was talking about really embracing a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we're challenged, we can embrace that and we can embrace the support we have with Christ and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then this week you framed it as enduring a challenge. What really differentiates that?
So I think I thought of it too, is at the outset, you know, when Jesus says, deny yourself, take up your cross and follow me, there's that initial decision, that initial call. And that's embracing or accepting of a challenge. Jesus says, you're going to have to carry your cross. And I think that's different. There's difficulty in that to say, like, this isn't always going to be easy, but I'm ready to do it. I'm ready to take that journey. And then we said it's different, though, once you're actually in the midst of that challenge, because you never quite know what they're going to be, but all of a sudden it comes, and now how do we endure that? Mm-hmm. And I just gave the example, kind of a silly one, of me playing in a ping pong tournament at seminary, right, and knowing it was going to be a tough tournament because all these people are good. But then once I actually got in the match and this guy was whooping me, you know, like, how do I, can I actually stay faithful and keep
playing,
working at it and trying my best? And it's different to endure it.
It is. Well, and ping pong is a very actually great example for that, because if any of you have ever played ping pong with someone who knows how to play ping pong, it is more humiliating than you realize.
Yeah. It can go badly really quick.
It can go really badly really quick.
Yeah.
So my question then is, how do we know if we're really supposed to, like, embrace a challenge or just kind of endure it? One of the phrases mm-hmm. that I think you used was, like, just keep plodding along looking towards Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Something along
the line. Yeah, keep showing up for and
yeah, keep
Jesus.
Showing up yeah. for and with Jesus. How do we know if, and I guess we're probably supposed to do both, mm-hmm. but how do we really determine whether we're supposed to be in a embracing, like, all right, gonna, you know,
mm-hmm.
get ready and do this, or I'm just gonna look faithfully because I can't. How do we know when to take what approach?
Yeah, that's good. You know, and obviously this is all faith related, of course. But sometimes for us, you know, we're being called to maybe a new stage in our faith, or maybe there's a new ministry the Lord's calling you to, or maybe He's saying, you know, I need you to get involved in this or be doing this mentoring or whatever. And that's, I think that part, that stage can be an embracing challenge. The Lord's saying, you need to step out in faith. You're going to have to take time to disciple this person or to be involved with this ministry or whatever it might be. I think, you know, going to seminary for me was obviously a big piece. Like, I knew it was going to be different. I'm going to be moving away from my family. You know, going into this new role that carries a lot of weight to it, I had to embrace that challenge up front. But then there's times as you're following in faith with that where things will come up, right? When, you know, for me in that example, when, yeah, how do you handle it when there's strife in the church, right? A conflict comes up. Or, yeah, someone dies unexpectedly and it's a beloved member of the congregation. Or you're just dealing with your own weakness in that. You know, these, you can't anticipate what will come. And that's a different, maybe, faith muscle. We have to trust the Lord at the outset when he's leading to say, yeah, he's going to lead us and we're going to follow his leading. He's the priority. Mm-hmm. And this one, it's, I'm here with you, Lord, but boy, this isn't what I thought it was going to look like. This person I'm discipling, they don't seem to be responding like I thought they would. I've got involved with this ministry, but Lord, I'm not seeing the fruit of it. You know, what's happening? And just that perseverance is the word we use a lot on Sunday.
Yeah.
You know, staying with the Lord through these things. And that's a different, maybe, like I said, faith or trust muscle. You know, trust he's going to lead us where we need to go. This is, again, to trust he's going to lead us through some of these valleys that come up. If that makes sense.
Yeah, that really does. And I actually love your muscle analogy because one of the muscles that we talked about a fair amount on Sunday, and I'd like to really kind of focus in on for today's topic, is the muscle of lament.
Mm-hmm.
That is something that, as you pointed out, we're really good at lamenting to our friends and to each other.
Yeah.
We're really generally not great at doing that to God.
Mm.
One thing that we do even worse is this thing called what I've always read it as corporate lament, coming from the Latin corpus, meaning the body. So this is just lamenting as a group, lamenting as the body of Christ, lamenting as whether it's a family. These sorts of things happen all the time. But we don't really talk about corporate lament.
Mm.
So in your experience, what can corporate lament look like? Because again, this is not something we're really familiar with, I think, in our individualistic culture.
Yeah, and there's different cultures expressed so differently too. You know, you and I, Austin, usually if we have a funeral service here, we're both involved in different roles in that. And I think of that event, and we often have a good amount of people that come to those from the church and to support that family. I think there's an expression of corporate lament there. You know, we're coming to remember this person, to be there with the family. We might not be as close to this person as family members were, but we want to share that together. And we're kind of a, you know, more of a Dutch background context, and it tends to be a more stoic type of group versus, yeah, you look at a funeral down in New Orleans, maybe
right.
In the context there, a totally different kind of expression perhaps. Or I think of the mourners in Jesus' day, you know, they actually had paid mourners coming in, right, that would wail. And, you know, there was just different expression than maybe we're used to. But that's one time to get together and do that. It's interesting, actually, this past year at our, we're part of the Christian Reformed Church in our Synod gathering, which is like the large gathering of the church. One of the topics that came up was about corporate lament in worship.
Hmm.
And, you know, it's not something you can mandate, but just the encouragement came out, this is something that the denomination said we should have as part of our worship. It might not be every single service, but as we see in Scripture, this is part of how we go through life together. There's joys and there's sorrows.
Yeah. And so, you know, like they said, as we see this in Scripture, I think in my limited experience, we see this really well in the story of Job. Could you just talk a little bit about how Job lamented and then how he lamented with community? And then to further tack on to that, how his community lamented with him in great ways and in not so great ways.
Yeah,
what can we learn from this to do and not to do?
Yeah. Yeah, Job's obviously, boy, yeah, if you're not familiar with that, I encourage you to go read it. But, you know, Job goes through immense loss. You know, first kind of possessions and family and then to his own body in the beginning of that story. And initially his friends come to him and they just sit with him for a period of time. And we see that just being there with a friend in the midst of sorrow. And, you know, nothing's necessarily said about it, but the implication is that was a good response, that they were there with him. And
I think for like a week, it said, before they even talked.
Quite a bit of period of time, right? And again, maybe something they did better in their culture. Some cultures are really probably more adept at this than we are. And we get really uncomfortable maybe sitting with people who are in that space. Forget about 7 days, even for 7 minutes. Sometimes we're very uncomfortable with people who are in the midst of emotions like that. But they did great. Yeah, they sat there with Job. And then, of course, they start speaking into it as well. And, you know, the Spirit's trying to teach us also about who the Lord is in the midst of these things. But their words aren't very helpful to Job. Right?
So, it's one of those, I think it's a pretty classic case of they think they know what he needs to hear, mm-hmm. and that is not at all the case.
Yes. Yeah, and that's a good caution there. So often, and I stumble this, you always want to have just the right word to say to someone. But what matters more is your presence than any words you could say. Mm-hmm. You know, I do remember some things and some of the losses I've gone through in my life that some people have said in positive ways. I think that's the grace of God, that you tend to forget sometimes some of the, you know, just anxious things that people say maybe in those moments. But yeah, that presence matters. And so thinking about how we lament together, we need to be present with each other, and of course with the Lord too. That's the Psalms. There's all those expressions, and those would have been used in corporate worship as well. They were there for that reason. There's even these songs of ascent in the Psalms from like Psalm 120 to 135. And some of those have a lamenting kind of feel because it would have been post-exile and the people are coming back. And, you know, there's talk about the tears there and, you know, how far we are from Jerusalem and these kind of things. So that you could see that the people were using this together. And it's nice to have the words there for you because sometimes we'll foolishly kind of go to other words that aren't so helpful. And so that's something to think about. If you have someone you're trying to walk with who's grieving, who's lamenting, your presence matters a ton. Mm-hmm. Just being there says so much. And just trusting also that is, you don't need to, you know, have some all of a sudden poof words of wisdom that are so profound. You being there really helps. And understanding that they're going through things. And it means a lot to gather together mm-hmm. when we do that in worship. We've done some services of lament with prayer time. We did that. You know, even during, I'm thinking back during COVID, and we had incidents there with that were going on in the country, even some of the rioting and that, and we just took some time to lament that, and just the other things that brought that on. And so, yeah, it's something that we need to exercise together.
Did Synod give any suggestions as to how we can do that well in a more modern context, or was it just kind of like, we'll figure it out. We'll work in this direction.
You're testing my knowledge of like, reading the Synod now, Austin.
But, well, even if then, regardless of what Synod said, then like, what do you think are some good ways that we can practice healthy corporate mm-hmm. worship in our modern times?
You know,
or corporate lament, sorry.
It starts with making space for it. And that's we did some of that this past week, and we just had the songs going. And I thought that was great. Sarah led into that this week for us here. And just saying, you can sing the words, and the words of the song were kind of lament, but also trust. Or you can just pray and put things before the Lord. And I thought that's a great space, too, where you can kind of just have room for that in worship. And I think sometimes we go so fast, one word to the next, just allowing some space for expressing those things, right? And, I don't know. It's hard, like in a worship setting, it's hard to know, because people express differently. Sometimes you have to lead into that, like mm-hmm. the Psalms kind of do. I don't know. Sometimes just sitting with something happens, maybe just saying, hey, we're going to get together, and it doesn't have to be so formal.
Yeah.
But we're just going to get together, and maybe there'll be some times of silent prayer led. Maybe there'll be some songs we're going to sing. But there's also going to be time to, maybe to talk to each other, sit next to each other, and grieve or lament what's going on. So I have to think about it more. Maybe there was suggestions they gave. I don't remember. I'd have to look at that
sure,
that portion
enough.
Of the things. from Synod, but it was encouraging.
And they do usually publish like a full book.
It's a big book.
Like it's a thick book. It's thicker than some Bibles, I feel like. So that makes sense. That's not pretty beefy. Fresh. I do want to then move this conversation from, so we talked, you know, we're really good at the individual lament, or at least we tend to be better at individual laments, but we can always do better. We've talked already a little bit about corporate lament on the church level. But I would love to take us even a step further out from that and look at how do we corporately lament as a nation when something tragically happens. So even though I don't remember this myself, I think one of the best examples of corporate lament that I've seen in a while is how we deal with 9/11. It was a very awful, tragic event. And we never, that's the whole, you know, we never forget that. We memorialize it, and rightly so. But I've noticed that our willingness to corporately lament some situations, like 9/11, doesn't always make its way to other issues. Part of this is because we've directly experienced this. It's a very vivid memory. But I'm just wondering, as a whole, how can we kind of deal with some of these things? So, for example, every year when February rolls around, I'll see people online asking questions about why we're continuing to teach and lament what happened to black folks here in the United States, especially pre-civil rights era, but even after. A paraphrased quote that I'll see at least once a year is, I didn't do anything to harm people. I wasn't even alive back then. Or if I was alive, I was in my 20s or a teenager, so... You know, this, why are we still talking about this? Why do we keep bringing this back up? And my question that comes from that, as we look at corporate lament on the national sense, why are we so willing to grieve and lament things that directly impact us, but less willing to grieve and lament things that directly impacted someone else? And does Scripture ever talk about grieving and making amends for and lamenting mistakes that we did not make ourselves?
Yeah, it's a good question, and I know there's a lot wrapped up in it. And some of it, you're getting to the heart of it, Austin. It's when something happens to us, at least some part of our identity we share. You mentioned 9/11. If you're an American, you felt, even if you didn't live in New York and weren't there and didn't know people who died in that, you still felt impacted, right? And in that case, you know, if I lose a loved one, it directly impacts me. I'm going to have much more lament or grief than, somebody else, you know, down the pew from me. Or in town next to me, lost a family member. So that's a big part of it. You know, we're the most important people in our worlds, right? So often, right? And that's how we go through life, lamenting that. And, you know, you'll see in Scripture, obviously, like, corporately, the Israelites own things that have happened before. You know, Nehemiah's prayer when they're in exile, and he prays in Nehemiah 9, and Daniel does in Daniel 9, too, about... You know, sins that have happened before, and that's God's people. So we have to remember, not everybody in our society, of course, is a Christian.
Right.
We probably are going to have different expressions even of lament. We always go back to our trust in the Lord, and that for us needs to be the differentiator too. But you know, even we were talking about this a little bit before we started recording, and for us as Christians, especially, of course, it's a good human trait too. But how do we allow space for other people to lament, even if I didn't experience this, right? So I'm a Caucasian male, right? So I didn't experience and don't experience things that, you know, a black person will experience in this country now or thinking back of the history going back. And so how do I, you know, think about it and say, well, where's the space? They need some space to maybe express things and talk about that. And, it's not the same as it was 150 years ago. But there's still hurts. There's still things that are off. Just like we would say, because of 9/11, there's still things that are different now and have changed. And there's a reason we remember, you know. Things are different post. And we think of Pearl Harbor going back for another generation or other incidents, whatever they might be. And so I think for me it comes back to that. How do we give space to those around us who maybe need to lament? And even if I'm not, you know, I don't have a personal grief. I might look at, you know, how things were 150 years ago and relations between black and white and say, oh, that is, I lament that, but my experience is going to be different maybe than someone else. And where I might say, like, oh, I'm really glad now things look different and let's move forward. Someone else, you know, is coming across things that are maybe, boy, that just brings me back to that pain.
So then I guess what does it practically look like to make space for someone to grieve and to lament something that you didn't experience? Mm. Is it just kind of sit down and shut up?
Oh, for sure. I mean, some of that, if you're in a relationship with someone and asking good questions, right? That's good. Being empathic, right? Just, you know, tell me about this. What's this like? What is this like for you?
Well, and I think why is this so impactful for you, I think, is such an important thing, because for us, it's so easy to get in our minds and say, like, I understand that was hard, but like,
right. Come but on. Why are we still doing this?
Why right? Right. Whereas like, especially like, well, you know, to use the 9/11 example, why, like, again, I was too young to remember 9/11. Mm. I was alive, barely.
Yeah.
But so one of the things that I found helpful is like, why did this impact you so much? And that's really taught me a lot. And again, it's just this, like, you got to find out, okay, I might not understand this, I might not feel this way, but what makes it so meaningful to someone else?
Right.
And just asking that question is so huge.
Right. For me, like, who remembers that particular event, you know, of 9/11, clearly, you know, obviously as an American, say someone from, like, Japan, right, I'm talking to, it'd be, you know, it's helpful for them to ask, you know, why is that impactful still? You know, it's 23, 22 and a half years later. Why is that still important? Why do you all still remember that? I think that shows, at least if it's asked in the right way, they're curious. They want to know, you know, what makes me feel this way, and what's my experience like? What's this been like for you, right? That's a good question, you know, to ask. Just like, you know, if you're thinking even on a basic level, right? Someone's lost a loved one, and, you know, it might be 2 years later. And you might be thinking, like, boy, why, you know, it seems like this person's still, like, really having a hard time with that. And you might not get it. This person's different from you in that, even if you've lost love. But you can ask and say, hey, how you doing?
Right.
What's it like? What are some of the hard spots for you? I can tell you're still grieving. And
yeah, and what makes this, you know, so, why was this person so important to you? What? Mm-hmm. And again, because then you get into the stories, like, especially if you're grieving a person. Like, okay, man, this was a really influential person sometimes. I mean, my grandfather on my mom's side died 2.5 years ago now, and I'll happily still talk about him till the cows come home, because he was such a impactful person on my life, right? And so I think, yeah, that shows that you're also willing to sit with, and it's, again, it's kind of like Job's friends. You're sitting with someone.
Yeah.
You're listening to them. You might not get this, but it is important to them, and that's what we do as a community, especially as a community of believers.
For sure. And I think not only societally, but in the church here too, I wonder how much of sometimes continued grief and pain is because we haven't had space to really process and to have someone listen to us. I mean, how often doesn't it help just to say, boy, it was good just to talk about that. Or to name someone, right, a loved one, just to acknowledge, like, I really miss this person, and to talk about them and name them. Because sometimes it seems like we just avoid bringing that person up because we don't want to deal with the emotions.
Yeah.
I think we just are so avoidant of these kind of things. We're afraid of emotions and that. But if we just would actually not sweep things under the rug, but bring it out, not that we wouldn't care anymore. There's still hurts there and pain. But I think that's part of how we heal.
Yeah.
Is being able to talk about it and sort of think about in the church when we go through things. And maybe we set out and we're like really hoping the Lord's going to work in this way, and a ministry flops. To just ignore that, it's not going to help us. We need to address it. Or a bunch of people leave the church. Yeah, we need to lament those things and to acknowledge and to own it before the Lord. And it doesn't mean we all have to be weeping. That's not everybody's expression. But when we just try to ignore things, it doesn't go well. It gets worse, right?
So, and giving space for people to process and heal is so important. I mean, that's one of the greatest gifts that my family growing up had, was that we were a space where we could listen and we could be heard and we could just process and grieve. And I feel like a much more well-adjusted human because of that.
Sure. I think it does help us, you know. We might not be all like hyper-intentional or emotionally intelligent people, but it helps us understand ourselves more, and for us as Christians to see the Lord there with us.
And to see the image of God in the person who's suffering too.
Sure, sure. Yeah, Jesus, he suffers more than anyone, right? That's the confession, you know, all throughout his life. And he went through these things. And So the Lord knows.
Right.
But we also humanly know each other. We don't maybe know the exact, I haven't had pancreatic cancer, but it's not much for me to try and imagine.
Mm-hmm.
I know what pain's like and suffering. Yeah. And so, yeah, we can work together through lamenting and to help each mm-hmm. other, to be there.
And I think a key part of sitting with someone who is lamenting is also developing empathy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, again, like, you won't necessarily know what it feels like to experience this, but being intentional about developing, like, hey, wow, you're hurting. Let me do what I can to be there for you.
Mm-hmm.
That's such a critical part of the human condition, and especially as believers in Christ, we believe.
Yeah.
You know, Jesus is so empathetic.
Yeah.
That he came down and, you know, that's part right. of the whole shtick.
Right. Oh, yeah. That's the main thing, right? The incarnation. You know, yeah, he can empathize with us.
And mm-hmm.
he goes so far with that as to go all the way to taking on our flesh.
Right.
Like God becoming human, we almost take that for granted.
Yeah.
It's wild that he would do this, and he has out of
yeah.
his love for us. And
yeah, so I just yeah. love that example of how to deal with lament. Because,
mm-hmm.
again, really just, again, sitting with people, going through it, asking questions. Yeah.
Well, think about, you know, you often ask, you know, what more would you get into? And we didn't really get into, like, these
yeah.
women. You know,
what more would you get into, Dan?
Yeah, well,
I'm shirking on my duties here.
No,
I didn't
no,
ask
no,
any
that's
more.
Right. But, like, these women, we don't know, I mean, not much is said about them. Again, probably because they're really well known. But I think of, like, Mary Magdalene, and it's not in this Gospel of Mark, it's in John's. But you see Jesus, to connect it with what we're talking about, you know, so he encounters Mary, and she doesn't know who he is. She thinks he's the gardener, and she's distraught. I don't know where they've taken him. And just his word to her there, Mary, you know, and just this kind of compassion. He could have said, like, what, didn't you listen to me when I was teaching you all these years? And, like, aren't you over this yet? Here I am. I'm alive. Like, he just compassionately, you know, speaks her name, and she sees him, and she rushes, and he calls her to mission after that. But I think even in the Gospels there, you see, here's this person who's been lamenting and trying to come to grips with what God's doing. And Jesus isn't harsh to her. And, like, we should have figured this out by now. And he's not harsh with his disciples when he goes and meets them, you know, later in the room. He says peace,
mm-hmm.
and he's gracious. And I think that needs to be our stance as well. Like, everybody's going through different things. Everybody goes through them at different paces. And we go through them ourselves at times, and we all want people besides us. And there's different ways to do that. Sometimes you can actually physically be with someone. Sometimes you can communicate your presence. You might be a card writer, or maybe someone lives afar. You send them a message, write a card. Maybe you, nowadays too, you can get a meal for somebody, right, and do that. And it's a way to let them know, hey, I'm with you. I know you're going through something. That has more impact than we probably realize, too.
100% it does. And even just to give a personal example, and I talk about this a lot because it was really, you know, it was kind of a big deal in my life,
mm-hmm.
but we had this whole immigration fiasco where my wife, to put the long story very, very short and very, very inaccurate, I guess we'll say it this way, but she was kicked out of the country,
right.
you know, for all intents and purposes. And she was kicked out in April of 2020, which was when nobody was around. And what really made me able to really move out of that big depressive slump that I was in at that point, mm-hmm. Was the few people who were around in my little bubble
mm-hmm.
at Spring Arbor that would be like, hey, Austin, come and have dinner with us.
Mm.
Just sit with us. See, you know, we'll see you. We'll see you in your grief. We're going to just be there for you. That
mm-hmm.
community aspect is so important when we're trying to deal with these really heavy,
yeah.
really hard things.
Yep. Yeah, I appreciate you sharing that because it does. I think that's a good challenge. I'm even thinking in my head, you know, there's others in our community. There's always someone who's kind of alone a bit for one reason or another. And whether it's hospitality like that or, you know, there's different ways. And so if you're listening, you know, and I know a lot of you do this, and there might be a different expression of it, but think about what you're gifted at that you might be able to, yeah,
yeah.
kind of come alongside someone or encourage them. And
even if you don't understand why they're upset, I think that's one of the big things, too, that I go back to is I'll sometimes see people posting, and I'm like, I don't know why you're grieving this.
Mm.
Like, this seems like a weird thing to
mm-hmm.
care so deeply about.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, okay, no, let's take a step back. This means a lot to them. I don't understand
yeah.
it, but this means a lot to them.
Yes.
Let me just say, hey, I see your passion. If you need to talk, I'll just listen. Mm-hmm. Something like that goes a long way.
And there's that, we're trying to be incarnate with them, too, in a way. We talked, this was several weeks ago, about the Myers-Briggs stuff, right? And it's true, like, some of us are more feelers than others. And if you're not, and you're encountering someone who is, it's like, what's the big deal? You know, come on now. I'm thinking more with my logical side. But that person, they need to express those feelings. They need someone to meet them in those feelings to really heal and go forward. And so to say, well, that's not really me, but I'm going to go there. And especially if someone knows that of you and you do it.
Yes.
It really will mean a lot.
Because it shows you really care.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good stuff. Well, Dan, thank you so much for talking about this. What are we going to be looking at next week?
Yeah, Palm Sunday this week. So continuing our theme, we're going to be there with the crowd, but not the Palm Sunday crowd, but this is at Jesus' trial with Pilate. And the moment comes when they have an opportunity to ask for Jesus' freedom or ask for the freedom of Barabbas. And just thinking about how the crowd in Mark is described as being stirred up by some of the leaders to ask for Barabbas and then to ask for Jesus' crucifixion. And just this challenge of how we're so tempted to make Jesus into our own version of what we want him to be. And it's so easy to kind of go with the crowd on that, to make him the Jesus of our cause. And how that was really the people on trial there, and they choose Barabbas, who fit maybe more what they thought things should look like at that time. And that's a challenge for us still. So, yeah, it's a, as I've been reflecting on it this week, it hits home in a lot of ways, I believe, personally,
yeah,
for me too. So, yeah.
Awesome. Well, I'm super looking forward to it, Dan. Thank you so much for your time and your insight today. Thank you to everyone who is listening, and we will be back again next week.